Oddnuts Daily is brought to you by Super Anti Spyware. Remove all the spyware, not just the easy ones, at superantispyware.com. And also the Podnuts Tech Website Builder. Build a Podnuts endorsed computer repair business website today at techsitebuilder.com. Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 267. 267 episodes we have done, and Podnuts Daily is a show about computer repair. Each week we have a computer repair technician come on the show, talk about what he's doing, what kind of tricks he has learned, neat techniques he's using, neat programs he's using, and try to help you guys out there who are trying to fix computers as well. So joining us today from smdcomputer.net is Steve D'Amico. Joining us at the last minute, we had some technical difficulties with our previous guest, so thankfully Steve was there, offered to do the show, so let's take it easy on him, okay? What's going on, Steve?
Hey, I'm in the shop, and I'm working on systems right as we speak.
Ah, cool. What are you doing?
I have, I have a Toshiba that's sitting next to me, and it had, the customer took it. What happened was they brought it in because they thought it was slow, it was acting very sluggish and everything. I took a quick look at it. I thought it was spyware all over it like usual, and it turns out there was actually really not much on there other than Norton's 360.
Oh, man. Is that what was causing the problem?
Yeah, it was causing a lot of sluggishness and slowness and everything, you know. So I removed 360, you know, Norton 360. That's all I really did. And it was expired anyway. Of course. So I removed that and I did some updates and the system was fine. I barely did anything with it. So I had some extra time with it and it's kind of a friend. It's one of my neighbors, my business neighbor next to my shop. So it was her daughter's computer. So I had a little extra time and I knew they were going to be around for another 3 hours. So I did a backup of the system and I used Fab's auto backup, which I'm a big fan of right now. And so I just had a little extra time. So I did that and I made the Fab's auto backup into a folder onto their desktop. And then I took the Fab's auto backup thing and I RAR'd it into a bunch of different pieces. And then I put those big RAR files onto two DVDs. And then I didn't ask for a backup. It's just kind of like an afterthought, kind of throw a backup together. I also wanted to try the new version of Fab's Fab's 3, which is not really new, but new to me.
Yeah.
And sure enough, like 2 months later, they come back to me and they give me the laptop and they say, there's something wrong with it. So I'm like, okay. So I look at it and all of their data is gone. And Vista's not updated. It was at Service Pack 1. I'm like, what happened?
Okay. They had some explaining to do.
Yeah, naturally. I said, well, where did this laptop come from? They said, well, this is the one you worked on. I'm like, no, there was no data on this thing. There's no pictures. There's no documents and everything. So I'm like, what's going on with this? And then it turns out that somebody, they gave it to somebody to repair and they did a factory wipe on it, you know, a restore.
Why didn't they give it to you?
I'm still not sure. It was the daughter and like a friend of hers.
They know now.
Yeah, so I brought it back and said, well, if this is the same laptop, because I immediately thought, I couldn't have touched this. I wouldn't have let it out of my shop without putting all the updates and, you know, everything else on it. So they swore that it was the same laptop, and then that's when I figured it out. And then I told her, I said, you know, what's the real problem here is that you lost all of your data. Like, it's completely clean of data. You have no music, no pictures, no movies, no anything. Her daughter freaked out naturally, and then I was like, "Oh yeah, I did a backup on this." And then she's like, "You did?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then they had to hunt down the DVDs I made, and now I have the DVDs, but I can't get one of the RAR files off the disk. So that's what I'm struggling with right now, just trying to get one of the disks to read. It's not really scratched or anything. I don't know what's really wrong with it.
You how many RAR files did you have? With RARs, what do you break them up into pieces, right?
Yeah, I broke them up into 700 meg chunks, and then and there's I think 9 of them or something of the sort, and I just can't get RAR number 3 to.
Man! But you see, you didn't know when you were backing it up that it was possibly corrupt, right? Like, or did you test the RARs after you did the backup?
No, I didn't test the RARs.
Yeah, you know, I probably wouldn't have either, but maybe it happened when you were actually doing the backup.
I should have. Well, I wanted to put them. I wanted to span the recovery onto DVDs, but I had no idea what to, you know, what to use specifically because I didn't have to split it up. So
Yeah, that sucks. Well, I know there's a disk. It's called Disk Span for Linux. There's Disco for Mac. I don't know what the disk spanning tool is for PC. Somebody might have emailed me that, but I forget. But that would have been easier than RARing it up.
Yes, it would have definitely been, and I would have used it if I knew about it.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, if anybody knows how to, I don't know, troubleshoot corrupt RARs, let us know. Steve needs help.
Yeah. So I have that one. And
you should have never told him you had a backup. Well, wait, you gave them the discs, right? Like, they had the discs in their possession?
Yes.
Okay, they did. Blame it on them. They broke it.
Of course. I mean, blame on myself. I mean, if it wasn't for me, they wouldn't have any backup whatsoever.
There you go. Exactly.
Even a funky one.
But you know what? It is kind of bad giving them hope. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, wait, we might be able to get your data back. Oh, just kidding. We can't. I don't know what's worse. But, so that's one thing. It's still good. It's a good dilemma you brought to us.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So I'm not fully finished with that one yet. Okay. I have another job behind me, which is this gateway here. And you can see it there.
Yes.
And that one's sitting on my bench, and it's a gateway desktop. And I got it with a 200. It's got a 250 gig hard drive in there, and it comes up with no it comes up with a NTL, what is it? Whatever. Basically, it's just not finding the hard drive. So
NTLDR.
NTLDR. That's right. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know. You've moved files. Real simple. So I told the lady. I said, you know, it could be the hard drive being dead. It could be, you know, it could be a whole assortment of things. So I told her. I said, you know, I'll take it back. I'll let you know if it's a good drive or not, and I'll do a data recovery. She's like, okay. Meaning data recovery. Like, I'm gonna look and, you know, I'm gonna use a few data recovery software programs, and then once that's, you know, if the hard drive is just going click, 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 done, and I'll go further than that.
Right.
I'm opening this drive. So I got it, and the mystery is I've done a few data recoveries on it, and I can't find any files really on it. It's like wiped clean. I've used get data back from NTFS on it, and I determined that it's an NTFS partition that was on there, but it's like a secondary drive that was never used. There's just nothing on there.
Yeah, NTLDR, it's pretty nasty. That happens, I think, sometimes when the operating system is just wiped. It's just gone. What did the thing get struck by lightning?
I don't know, but the hard drive's, like, it's physically functioning,
right.
So to read data, but there's just nothing on there. It's just coming up as no deleted files. Just
is the drive showing as 250 gig?
Yes,
it is. That's a tough one. I don't know. There's no files at all on it.
Nothing. I can't get anything come out of a recovery program.
What about just using like a normal like file like manager? Like, what if you boot to Linux or Ultimate Boot CD and just look at the disk? Does it show anything?
No, I haven't gone that far yet. But you know what? I shouldn't say nothing. I mean, I'm getting system volume information folder. I'm getting a few like random things, but nothing, you know, a few file system things, but nothing like real. Like nothing.
No, my documents folder.
No, nothing. No Windows folder. No, nothing.
I'd run a fix boot on it anyway, just to see what happens.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll try that.
It's Windows XP.
Yes.
I remember running fixed boot on NTLDRs. It's taking me back. I don't know. A Windows repair, maybe? Windows repair might do something. I can't remember the exact fix on NTLDRs, but...
Yeah,
you're a fan of Windows repair. That might be something you could try. I don't know.
I've tried a few things. Nothing's coming up.
Yeah.
I was going to call the client and say, oh, there must have been some kind of mistake. You gave me a system without a you gave me a system with a different hard drive in it. This is somebody bought a blank one and put it in here. I mean, obviously, you know, this is what I was going to call her about, right? And then I looked on the sticker at the front of the, and it looks like an old gateway. You know, it's kind of an older style gateway. And I looked at the front and it says the specs and it says a 250 gig hard
drive. Yeah, no, I'm certain. I would be pretty certain that that's the actual drive. I'm trying to remember. I have had situations like that in the shop where the data is just gone or something. It probably got like a major stroke of lightning. I don't know. Your recovery program should be pulling up something though. I'm not sure.
It just comes up with just a couple little things. I don't know. I'll have to find out what it is. Maybe I'll let everybody know what's going on with it. All right. Conclusion on Podnuts at night or something.
Okay.
So, Mike, here's a little show and tell thing. This is, I guess for all you audio people, you guys aren't going to see this, but I have, because I happen to be doing this in my shop, I have my jacks, my box of jacks, and I have two of them, actually. And I got to give a little show and tell here. This is what it looks like when you collect DC jacks.
Wow. You mean collect them off of motherboards or buy them?
I buy them. I specifically buy them.
Wow. You got some Dells in there? Dell ones?
Yeah. I got plenty of those. Okay. And so I keep them in nice little compartments. I also have more. Now I'm actually going past buying the actual jacks for the boards. I'm getting them on the wires.
Okay. Now I have to ask you. You have like two little fishing tackle boxes full of jacks. Do you normally... When you have a power jack replacement, do you normally have the jack? Honestly, do you normally have the jack that you need, or do you look through your stock and go, "Oh crap, that's the one I don't have," and then have to order it?
9 times out of 10, I have.
Okay. Okay.
The only times I don't usually have them is when they're really weird, like a really odd one that only has like maybe like 3 or 4 Sony models. Let's say will have it, but. Like some jacks are weird. Like there's only like 2 or 3 systems that actually are known to use that jack, but there's, you know, but they look similar to a lot of other ones. And I've never really tried to make them fit, never really tried to modify or anything like that. But, so occasionally I'll run into those, and those are weird, a little strange. But usually if it's on a wire, then I don't have it, but that's starting to change because now I'm buying them on wires. So now I'm starting to, what I do is I try to, I watch for them for sale, a new one on eBay, and I order them overseas a lot of times.
How much do you get them for?
It depends. They're a little expensive when they're on the wire. When they're on the wire, a lot of times, the prices could be anything. I mean, I've seen them go for like 30, 40 bucks a piece.
Wow. How much are you buying them for?
Well, I'm buying them for, now the prices have been dropping drastically. In the past, like, maybe 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Now I'm finding them for, like, maybe 10, 8 bucks, the absolute cheapest. But
damn, that's expensive for just buying, hoping you get that laptop in, to me.
It is. No, you're right. But I'm finding that some of the people in Japan, China specifically, some of the sellers out there are selling them for less. Because they just want to get rid of them, I'm sure, and nobody really wants to buy from China when you have a customer waiting, you know? It's always, shipping's a lot slower from there, and they choose slower shipments from China because, you know, I mean, they gotta save on international rates.
Buy them on eBay?
Yeah, I buy them on eBay.
I mean, it's a good tip, and, for people who like to stock things, they should do that. I was always... One for if it wasn't a Dell jack, I would just do my Radio Shack method. But you know, sometimes it was more work than it was worth. I mean, it would have been nice to have the exact jack I needed, but I hated stocking things in the hopes that I would use it. But if it seems like you're using them, I mean, what's the turnover on them? Do you find you're buying more than you're using, or?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely buying more than I'm using. But I'm not buying them for much. If it's just a loose jack from a system, depending on how much I buy, and what seller, like how many I buy in one spot, like how many I buy in a lot, I can get them for about $2 or $3 a piece, which isn't bad. So I try to buy everything that I know that I don't have. And except for wires, one's on a wire because when they're $8-$10 a piece, it adds up pretty quick. So I kind of sparingly buy those. I try to buy the ones that are that are most available. Some of the loose jacks I have will fit on a wire if I was to solder it on, and I can. I have the ability to. I have all the tools and everything, so that won't be too much of an issue. But I also have these little guys. I'm getting these on a wire. Occasionally, I'll find them in systems that I'm tearing down.
You know what? Describe, because even though we're doing video now, it's still not going to be released as video.
I have a 90 watt and a 60 watt DV series. And the DV series, these are jacks that are right on the off of the motherboard, but on a wire.
And yeah, they have their own little circuit board with a USB jack on it, and they glow blue, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Even the jacks do when they're loose and off the board. The LED is inside the jack, so if you plug the jack in straight, like with nothing hanging off of the leads, it'll actually glow too as well.
Yeah, those jacks. I have to say, I've done Radio Shack method on those jacks. And they're tricky because the circuit board on that little board you're holding is multi-layered. And some of the leads coming off the power jack go into the middle of that board. You can't access it. You have to follow it along with a voltmeter to find where it ends up. And I've done it, but it's a pain. It's very tricky because you're like, where's the positive? Where's the positive? And you can't find it. And it eventually pops up on the circuit board somewhere down the line. So DVs are not easy to do Radio Shack method, but how much were those things?
I got these in a steal. I was able to kind of find a seller that didn't know what he had and was selling them for a lot less than he should have. So I quickly kind of scooped in on it and I got one of them. And the other one I got from a local repair tech that just was getting rid of junk and, it happened to be kind of still inside of an empty case. So I was like, oh, that's nice. So now I have two of these. And so just in case, I'll replace the jack right in a DV series, HP, a DV. That means DV series, DV 6000, 9000, or 2000. I'll replace the jacks, no problem. But and there is two actually different types. There's just 90 watt and a 60 watt, 65 watt that look the same. But it's nice to have it's nice to have it on a board. You know?
Which ones use the 90 watt, like the DV 9000s?
I think so, okay. But I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure on that.
Maybe ones with hotter processors need the more juice.
Yeah. I also have my hot air rework station, which helps really drastically helps doing these jacks. They're a nightmare.
Yeah, I'm meaning to ask about that. I think a couple other people were asking. How is the hot air rework station working? Is it good?
It's excellent.
It is? Everything,
but yes. There is a little butt to it, but not much of a butt. See, I bought the hot air rework station. Well, let me explain what it is. I bought a hot air rework station. It's really a soldering iron, but that uses hot air instead. So you're holding, a stick, normally would be iron attached to it, but instead hot air comes out of this thing and it gets up to 450 degrees. It's my specific one has digital a digital temperature gauge, and I can adjust the airflow as well. And what's really nice about this is that it's able to heat up multiple leads at the same time, therefore making them all molten at the same time. I'm able to pull the jack all at once.
Wow, that sounds like such a treat! I'm telling you,
to not have to remove all of the solder on a motherboard. Is makes life so much easier.
And it doesn't melt the board?
No, it doesn't melt the board, but it will make other components molten around it. If you're not careful, you can mess those up as well.
Is that the butt you were talking about?
No, there's a little butt about it. Traditionally, removing solder off of a motherboard or any kind of PCB board, to remove a component, you use a solder wick, and you press the soldering iron onto the solder wick, and then the solder will actually melt into the solder wick, and then you remove it.
Right.
Problem with this is that you need a really hot soldering iron, because you're not just heating up, heating up solder directly. You're heating up the braid, the solder braid, which is the solder wick. You're heating that up, which is now heating up the solder. So the problem is you can't do that with a 450 watt soldering iron reliably. You're just going to tear your hair out you're going to throw yourself out the window if you try to do that with a 450 watt soldering iron. I have a 450 watt soldering iron attached to my hot air rework station. So if you use traditional methods, it's just not going to work with the 450 watt. That's what came with my hot air rework station. So I can't do the old way with it. I tried it out. I want to just see what it would do, and it didn't work at all. So that's why I have a digital weller to do that if I wanted to, but I don't want to. I don't need to,
Yeah, but, you're saying though, the only problem with this is it came with an extra tool that you don't really use.
Yeah, but it's kind of a little, I just found it interesting to find out that there just actually is a big difference between a hot, really hot iron and a cold iron. And I mean cold meaning like 450 watts or 450 Fahrenheit.
Watts. 450 watts is so hot. That's like so powerful.
You're saying watts like a dope. I meant Fahrenheit.
Okay. I'm trying to wrap my wits because I'm like, I use a 15 watt iron from Radio Shack. All right. I got you.
I do that all the time.
So you're saying 450 is not hot enough.
450 Fahrenheit is not hot enough.
Oh, I get you.
850 is Fahrenheit is definitely hot enough.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, all right. Well, that's a little bit of a butt. I mean, but still, like, that's not even the reason why you got the hot air station in the first place. Even if it came without an iron, it would still be cool, right?
Yes.
Okay.
For me, yes, absolutely. But if it doesn't come with an iron, you still need to get the jack soldered back on because not necessarily. You might want to add more solder, but my method with the hot air is I literally just leave the molten solder right on the board. I don't have to take it off at all.
And then you push a new jack, and then you heat it up again and push a new jack through?
Yeah, almost like I want to recycle the solder that was originally on there.
So you don't need a soldering iron?
Essentially, no, okay. But I add more.
Okay, just to like make sure you shore up all the points on it.
Yeah, I like to do that, of course, and also add a good, solid, thick bead of solder on there because I feel, and it's not 100% for sure, because a lot of times they break these jacks, they break internally. Mm-hmm. But I figure a big ball of solder on the end is a lot better than a little bit of solder.
Yeah.
But also, for everybody out there that's having trouble doing these jacks, the temperature, the solder that they use on these motherboards is high temperature solder. So it's not as easy as removing the solder on, say, a desktop motherboard or any other regular traditional PCB board that doesn't get super hot. Laptops really encapsulate that heat, so they have to work around with that. You have to kind of add different types of solder.
Hmm. Yeah. So, would you say the hot air workstation is worth it? Worth buying? Absolutely.
If you do a lot of jacks, definitely worth it.
How much do they cost?
For me, it cost about $120.
Ah, God, that ain't bad.
It's not bad at all. I thought they were going to be. I used to look at them, and I used to find them different types of stations. I used to see them for like $300 and $400, and I was like, I want it, but that's just too much.
Yeah,
for me.
It's too much.
So then when I found this one, I said, oh, yeah, that's it. Done. That's not an easy. I mean, that's a hard decision to make.
is it holding up good? It's good quality?
Yes, it's okay. Good quality so far. It's a little young for me. It's a little, I don't use it as often as I thought I would, but I am using it, and it has been working exactly the way I want it to.
Good. Cool. Yes. That's very awesome. So,
And for anybody out there that needs DC jacks, you know, done on their laptops, say they don't want to do it, they don't want to get into this type of work. I don't blame you. There's a lot of techs that don't do it. I do this work for a lot of local techs around me. If you guys out there need help with DC jacks or just don't want to do it for whatever reason, I am available at any time. I'm all equipped, ready to go.
All right, he's at smdcomputer.net.
Yes.
All right, you got anything else for us? And don't worry if you don't. I got about 10 emails we could go over if we need to.
I have, I've heard this, it was almost kind of legend to me because I never actually found this out to be true or not. I had a customer come in with a problem with their battery. They needed a DC jack replacement. And they said, oh, my battery doesn't work. Then suddenly my laptop won't turn on anymore at all. So I was like, all right, let me take a look. So I hooked up I have an iGo power adapter I've talked about a few times. And the iGo, it didn't power up the laptop. So I was like, all right, well, you need a jack. So he's like, okay. So I did it. And I noticed that his battery wouldn't charge. And I'm using his power adapter, which is a Targus power adapter. And so I was like, oh, that's weird. It just won't charge. So I called him up and said, the battery in here doesn't work. I said, do you know about that? And he said, no, that's supposed to be the good one. So I'm like, he goes, I have the other one here. And he goes, oh, maybe I mixed them up. I'll be over in a few. So he comes over and he takes his, you know, brings his little battery with him. He slides it in. It won't charge either. So I'm like, what's going on with this? So I hooked my iGo up there just for curiosity's sake. And suddenly the battery starts charging. So I found out that I don't know. Now, I've heard this before, that certain universal power adapters won't charge batteries. In this case, with this laptop, my iGo was able to charge the battery and the laptop, but his TARGUS wasn't able to charge batteries.
And what brand was it again? Was it Dell or was it Lenovo? What was it?
It was a compact. It was an old piece of junk.
It didn't have a center pin like the Dells did. It had just positive and negative on the adapter leads, or did it have one of those funky center pins? Because those center pins carry like data, don't they? Tell on the computer whether to charge the battery or not. Or
it had a center pin for sure. To be specific, I actually remember the model number. It was a compact 2200, which is old. It's an old one. It's really? A very
I know that model. I didn't know they had a center pin. You know, the only adapters I've seen that don't like charging batteries are the ones that have that center pin, like the most of the Dells have, where it's got a positive on the inner ring, positive on the inner ring, negative on the outer ring, and then that middle pin. So it had one of them, huh? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that would kind of explain it then.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I was actually really surprised that my stupid little iGo actually even charged that. Because everybody, I would show my iGo to a few techs and they'd go, oh, you know, I heard that those things don't charge batteries. And I was kind of worried about that. am I throwing out batteries on systems I get because that are mine specifically because they're not powering up because of the iGo?
Right.
Or is it, you know, I don't know. And then it turns out that, and I never actually could pinpoint that my iGo wasn't charging a battery. So far, it works.
So that kind of said that it does charge batteries.
Yeah, I guess so. Huh. Well, that model, it does. Huh. Yeah, real interesting.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, so see, he actually just took his TARGUS and he's like, this thing's junk, and threw it out.
I've thrown out a bunch of TARGUSes. I returned them. I was buying, like I said before, reconditioned ones, and they were factory reconditioned, and I don't know what they did to the factory. I think they just looked at it and said, the outside looks good, and then they just shipped them back out. They never worked. It's such a huge return rate on them. Failure rate.
Well, you know, the problem with the iGo is that it's horrible for any other use other than computer repair techs.
Right.
It's like a $200 power adapter. Who the hell are you going to sell that to?
I know. And there's the hardware inside those things are definitely not worth it. It's just their whole philosophy is, okay, they know your laptop costs between $500 and $1,000. So you can't use your laptop without the thing. So they might as well milk you for the price.
Well, that or it's like, I think what they do is, I don't know, they go, hey, we can make a device that'll charge your laptop and your cell phone and maybe your MP3 player all in one power adapter. And you're like, okay, so what's the price point going to be? How about $150?
Only $150.
Yeah. And it's like, come on, who would want that? Right. I'm surprised they're in business though. But for repair techs, the one I have, which is the Everywhere 130, works excellent. The newer ones, I think they kind of caught on. Their newer models are a lot less expensive, but they charge still a lot of stuff. So
they're not a lot less. I bought a newer one.
Well, I think they're a lot less than they used to be.
Expensive. Yeah, they're not $200. They're $100 now.
Oh, okay. Still, I don't care. So.
Yeah, we know you love your iGo.
I like my iGo in my shop. I wouldn't buy one.
All right. You got anything else?
Well, if anybody's interested in reading more about this stuff, I have it on my blog. The iGo, the hot air reworkstation, all that kind of stuff. If you want to see pictures and details and stuff like that, go there, which is stephendemico.com.
Cool.
Yeah. I guess you can do the emails.
Yeah, I got a bunch of them. Might as well. And if you think of anything else, we'll cover it.
Okay.
Emails. I went through, actually, I started using that priority inbox from Google, and I actually found that I like aspects of it, because I remember I told you, Steve, that the way I do my emails is I star all the important emails that I need to answer with the little star.
Yes.
Well, the priority mailbox shows your priority mails at top, and then the second tier shows all the starred emails that you have. Did you know that?
No. I haven't installed it yet. I had no idea it does that. That's actually a really cool function.
I love catching Steve off guard. I could see you.
That's a cool function. You didn't catch me off guard.
Okay. So that thing I'm using is I could see all the starred emails that I've not answered, and it actually goes back several months. So I went, actually this one's not too old, but I answered a bunch of them. Some of them I'm going to read on Podnuts Daily. I thought I was so good at answering all my emails, and then I finally see some of them that I actually didn't answer and I should have. Anyway, this one's from Buford. This is only from the 2nd of September. He says, Steve, I was listening to Jorge Hernandez at 123 Computer Repair about this problem. This is a good link to info on that problem. I never miss a show. Keep up the good work. And Jorge was on a couple Podnuts dailies ago, and the problem that he was talking about was setup did not find any hard disk drives installed in your computer. And the article that Buford sent me was from Raymond.cc. So do a search for Raymond.cc, and the title of the article is Setup Did Not Find Any Hard Disk Drives Installed in Your Computer. And it actually goes through, I can't read it because it's kind of long, but if you want to like find out how to fix that problem, there's a couple ways to do it with this article. So just wanted to mention that. Thank you, Buford. And again, the website to go to is Raymond.cc. Okay. Blaine says, hey, Steve, it would be great if you could get Bryce back on Podnuts. You know, I think I read this one, Blaine. He's basically mentioned to get Bryce from Technible back on the show. I think I mentioned that. I forgot to uncheck it. And I do, Blaine. I do want to get Bryce back on. It's a great suggestion. I will be talking to Bryce soon. He actually emailed me earlier today, so I'm going to catch up with him. Oh, by the way. What? You want to hear him too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fabs is going to be on the show. His name is Fabrice from France. Steve Dubs, Steve-O, who actually emails into the show, emailed Fab and said, yeah, I used your program. You should definitely go on the show. And he goes, okay. So I sent him an email, and we're going to set it up maybe next week. So Fab from Fab's Auto Backup is going to be on the show. Fabrice. Okay, Blue Light Mobile says, I have an old AMD Athlon XP3000 computer. I noticed the computer is running a little slower than it usually performs. I do a good job of keeping it free of crapware and spyware. I checked the hardware monitor in the BIOS, and I noticed it was running hot at 70 degrees. I changed the CPU fan with a copper one. I also put in a brand new exhaust fan. He meant the heat sink with a copper one. And I also put in a brand new exhaust fan. The temperature dropped off 5 degrees. Sometimes if I'm not using it, it'll go down to 60 degrees. Is this normal, or will my CPU end up burning out? The max temperature rating is 70 degrees for my processor. Is it normal to run almost near max temp? I don't think 70 is that hot, is it, Steve?
I'm not sure of the temperatures. That's the one thing I never really fully learned.
I can't remember either. Timster, it's 70 hot. Timster's in the chat room. 70's hot or not. But anyway, while I'm waiting for Timster's answer, the thing that I would look at, Blue Light Mobile, is if your computer just started running slower than usual, and you replace the heatsink and the fan, and that's probably not the problem. There's probably some program in there that's pushing your CPU, because the fan and heatsink, you know, that doesn't really make your computer run slower. It makes your processor run hotter, but that's not even going to make your system run slower unless it's extremely hot. So I would definitely look at a software problem for this. Your CPU is running hot for a reason. Or, your computer's running slower for a reason. I don't think going after the heat problem is the answer. I think it's something you should do definitely anyway, and always blow the dust out of your heat sink and fan and make sure your thermal grease is fresh and making a good connection between the heat sink and the CPU. But look at your software and see what's causing your computer to run slower. Computers just don't start running slower because of the CPU. Rarely. Timster, don't know what he said, actually. He's in the chat room. I have no other software but Symantec. Yeah, look, I would look at your task manager and just see, look at what processes are running and what your CPU is running at. Is it running at 50%? Is it running at 100%? Is it running at 2%? And if it's not running below 10%, find out what program is just jacking this thing around and get rid of that program and make sure your CPU is running. When it's idle, it's running under 10% somewhere. That's what you need to do. Anything to add on that, Steve?
I'm not really good for temperatures. One thing I would make sure is that if the fan is running like loud, maybe replace the fan. Maybe the fan is, if it's running loud and kind of like it sounds bad, like if it sounds like it's running hard.
Yeah, he replaced the fan.
Oh, he did.
And the heatsink. That's cool. This one's from Abdul. He says, "Hey, Steve, I'm one of your biggest fans, and yep, I'm a laptop fan. Anyway, I have a problem that needs to I need to change the LCD of an IBM ThinkPad SL510, but there's only 4 screws on the front bezel available. And after unscrewing, I'm unable to take off the bezel. I couldn't find any information regarding replacement of the SL150 series. I even did a search on the net. And I'm sending you this request to help me out or send me any link from where I could find this information to change or replace an IBM ThinkPad SL150 LCD. Well, you got to take off all the screws off the bezel. I don't know the SL510, but on any laptop screen, some screws are covered by little rubber nubs or the little circular stickers or square stickers. So make sure when you go to take the bezel off the front of the LCD, you take off all the screws that are noticeable and then look for like secret rubber spots that you actually have to peel off to get the screws out from behind them. And then there's, like I said, there's also some stickers just, which are basically there to make the front bezel look nice. And so you don't see the screw heads. So make sure you've got all those bases covered. And then if you feel like you got all the screws off, you actually have to start prying around the edge of that screen to get it off. Use a spooger, like Timster talked about on the last show. It's a piece of plastic, basically, so you're not scraping up the edge of it's a thin piece of plastic. It lets you kind of pry open things, so you're not scraping up the plastic and with a screwdriver and putting dents in the plastic. So I would try something like that. If you're sure you have all the screws out, then you have to apply some force and kind of finagle around the edges of that screen. Find the spot of the least resistance that's going to pop that bezel off and start there. Don't start at like a part that's really tough. Start at a spot that's easy to get to. And the front bezel will eventually pop off if you have all the screws. Also, you got to make sure too that you got to be careful because sometimes the bezel is glued on the front of the screen and that's why it's stuck on there. So you have to apply some force, but only after you make sure that you have all the screws out. It's not real complicated. Just got to look real tough, real hard.
I'm not sure, but I think there is like little square rubber, like there's 4 square little rubber things that are in between the corner rubber little things. There might be screws underneath that. That's possible.
Okay. Yeah. Check under all the rubber nubs.
He could be, yeah, that. And also, I think he could be afraid to just pull it off because it is hooked. It's the front bezels are usually hooked on. And it does take, unfortunately, it takes a little bit of effort. Not a lot of effort, but a little bit of, I wouldn't say
force.
I don't want to use the word force, but a little bit of force to actually kind of remove that. It does unsnap in a way.
Definitely. But if you feel like you're bending the plastic to where it's going to break, then just stop because you kind of went too far. I usually pick a corner or a side that I run my finger now along the whole edge of the monitor, and I find the spot that's going to pop off the easiest, and I make that my starting point. So I suggest that he does that.
What I do is I take my fingertips and I push it against the edge, like pushing it almost like off the laptop, yeah. and almost like hooking it and then pulling
to unlatch it.
Yeah. Like if I'm using the left edge, if I'm undoing the left edge, I'll push that left edge more left, and then a lot of times that will unhook.
There you go. Good tips.
Yeah.
All right, this one's from Chris. He says, "This looks easy to enter. I would enter, but I'm not eligible. Looks like somebody has to win the $25,000. This is a contest from Denso Dare to Dream. densodaretodream.com/robotics. So if you go to Denso, D-E-N-S-O, daretodream.com/robotics, looks like a contest for, I don't know, some geeky robot thing. I didn't even check it out, but if you're into robotics, check it out. Thank you, Chris, for that. $25,000 prize doesn't sound that bad if it's legit. Bob sent me a article. Ooh, he sent me a... Oh, man, it's really pouring now. I don't know if you guys can hear that. He sent me a link to buy a spooger. This was after he heard the... Timster article. Heavy duty spooger, $2.95. That's how cheap these things are. And where is he getting it at? iFixit.com sells spoogers. So if you're looking for a spooger, S-P-U-D-G-E-R, go to iFixit.com. They're selling it for $2.95. It's a good idea to have a spooger. Do you use a spooger, Steve?
Yes, I have two of them. I don't use them too often, though.
Really?
Yeah, it's really weird. I have them available to me, next to me.
I know that I had one for an Apple. I came with an Apple, and it came with my Apple, my first MacBook I ever bought.
It came with it?
It came with it. I used it for that.
Wow.
And then I put it somewhere, I lost it, and I've been looking for it ever since. So.
Was it black?
I can't remember.
Okay.
But I don't really need it now, but I did.
I see them on eBay. They're a lot more expensive than what you were just saying. Last I saw them was for like maybe $9 a piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Carlos says, hey, Steve, could you... Oh, there we go. A lot of you guys who send me emails like for laptop repair videos, I say, oh, they ask me a question, and I say, yeah, I'll cover that on the show. And they go, what show? Like, because they don't know about Podnuts. They just bought the videos. And I go, you don't know about the show? So this is from Carlos. He says, hey, Steve, pardon me if I continue asking questions since I became your customer and pupil in repairing laptops. At the moment, I'm in trouble with one of these toys. I haven't been able to repair it. At first, I thought it was the screen was the problem, since it will work fine when I turn the machine on, but then it will fade away blank. Change the screen to no avail. Okay, well, I think his English is a little off. And he says, I changed the screen to no avail, but this time I poorly noticed the Windows logo in the background, very, very scarce. Then I changed the inverter, but still the same problem. I plugged the machine into another monitor and image and everything works fine. What could the problem be? Then impede the screen to work well. Help, please. I already spent $120 in parts. I also wiped out the hard drive and reloaded the OS. Okay, well, first of all, Carlos, if you have a screen problem, don't wipe out the OS, not the solution. Because you're always going to get the BIOS, even if you do wipe out the OS. So if you're not even getting a BIOS screen, then you got a screen problem. It's not software. So sorry you did that, but that's not the problem. As far as you not seeing you're able to see the images on the screen, but you're not getting any backlight. So you had the right, you're on the right track here. Like you checked it's the inverter and you checked if it was the screen. You say you replaced both of them. Now, it could be that you got a defective part, either a bad screen or a bad inverter. Could be. So we can't rule that out. But if both the screen that you bought and the new inverter are good and you're still getting no backlight, it could be an LCD cable, but that's very rare to make that symptom. Or it could be something on your motherboard that's not, the circuit is not giving power to the inverter to light your bulb. And I've also seen that happen at motherboard level, where it looks like it's an inverter or a screen problem, but it's actually a motherboard problem, right? Somewhere in the circuitry where it's sending a signal to your screen, it's not sending out the voltage to power the inverter. I've seen that as well, so... It's gotta be one of those four things.
I take the bulbs out of panels that are broken because I don't like to keep the whole panel because I think it's a waste of space. So what I do is actually remove the bulbs, but I leave the little plastic underneath and the plastic and like the aluminum around it.
And the connector.
I leave the connector, of course. Yeah. And I keep these bulbs so that I can plug them into when I think an inverter might be bad. I have a lot of them.
Yeah. Wow. That's very smart. I keep the whole screen just because I just didn't think of what you did. That's all. The only reason. But and you have to have that. Otherwise, you're going to spend $120 and you're not going to find out what the right problem is. You can't just guess when you're able to see a faint images, like he said. You know it's either the screen or the bulb. You can't just guess. You could end up spending a lot of money being wrong.
To me, you have to have a bulb. You have to have these bulbs on hand to test, because what are you going to do? Most people just order the inverter, and then it comes and the inverter seems to just not work. And then where are you?
Right.
You just yell at the eBay seller but you don't really even know. I've actually sell inverters and I deal with it a lot. Yeah. So I usually tell them, you got to test them. And,
So I would grab a couple bulbs from somewhere and use it to test your inverter and make sure your inverter's good. And then you got to make sure your screen's good. I mean, it could be, like I said, those parts are either defective or it's at the motherboard level, which I've seen. I have seen that. So, and that's usually, I don't know how to fix it at motherboard level because there's no obvious point where that actually, you don't see any burns. You don't see any points where connection's broken. One thing you could try though, Carlos, I've done this a couple times. It never worked, but it's worth a shot, is make sure the connector from your LCD cable to the motherboard is making a good connection. Sometimes they get a little, actually, sometimes they get a little burn up in there. So I usually like to take a toothbrush and brush that inside of that connector and make sure that there's nothing blocking that connector, the connection between the LCD cable and the motherboard. Give that a shot. Okay, why don't we read one more here? This one's from John. He says, Steve, first, welcome to Florida. I live in Venice, about an hour south of you. Just wanted to share a success story with you. I was doing a virus cleaning job on an XP machine. I was using Super Anti Spyware, Microsoft Security Essentials, and other tools I learned about on your show. I found the malware and I cleaned it. However, I was not able to open the Microsoft update sites in Internet Explorer. As a result, I could not do any OS updates. All other websites worked fine. I checked the DNS host files. I ran ipconfig/all, checked the DNS server settings, ran WinFixXP, and Dialafix, all with no results. I finally went to the Podnuts forums, and I found a post by Louie describing the TDSS rootkit. I used the link to a Kaspersky application especially for this rootkit. That did the trick. Thanks to Louie and the Podnuts for helping me with my first rootkit battle. That's from John from Vario Computer Solutions at variocs.com. John, thank you for plugging the Podnuts forums. Thanks, Louie, for posting in the Podnuts forums. This is the kind of thing the Podnuts forums can help you with. Every day that I go there and look in, there's always people posting up new problems and solutions to the problems that are already posted in there. It's becoming this huge well of information that you guys really should take advantage of. Definitely check out the forums. Thank you, John, for the success story. Anything you want to add on that, Steve?
That's great. Okay. I love Kaspersky. If you check out their site, they have antivirus removal tools, like he was mentioning, and some of them are actually, I mean, really, really amazing and specific towards different rootkits. Last I was there, they had like at least maybe 12, 15 or more.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really nice. Yeah. And they're free.
Kaspersky seems to be on the ball.
Yeah, really nice.
You know who else is on the ball?
I know who.
Who?
Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah, Super Anti-Spyware is definitely on the ball. These guys are a sponsor of Podnuts, and I want to take a minute and talk about them for 1 minute here. Okay, Super Anti-Spyware is what it is, what the name says. It's an anti-spyware program, and I use it at my shop, or used it at my shop when I had my shop. Steve, do you use Super Anti-Spyware?
Of course.
It's part of your arsenal. It's definitely a tool that you want to use, and you can use it stand alone, or you can use it in conjunction with other programs. If you're running an antivirus and you install Super Anti Spyware, it runs peacefully. They can coexist peacefully together, so no worries there. Best thing about Super Anti Spyware is it's free. That's the free version is manual. So if you want to use the free version, you have to run it manually. There's no automatic running in the background for the free version. But there's a pro version, and the pro version includes the ability to schedule a scan. It offers real-time protection, automatic definition updates, and their spyware database is updated 3 to 10 times daily. So you want to have the pro version because you want to get those updates as they're released. It's really a valuable part of having Super Anti Spyware. There's lifetime licenses available. And this is all at superanti-spyware.com. Superanti-spyware is lightweight. It's easy to install. It's easy to use. If you want to buy the pro version, for the friends in the Podnuts community, use the coupon code FRIEND at checkout, and you will receive an additional discount. That's if you guys want to buy it for yourselves and use it, which I recommend. But here's the best part of Super Anti-Spyware for you computer repair technicians. This is the part I really like about them being a sponsor. They have a reseller program. You guys are computer repair techs out there. You need to be selling Super Anti-Spyware to your customers. You need to give them some protection before you send their computers off. And don't put free protection on there. Don't put AVG or Microsoft Security Essentials. Those programs, you know, they might do the job, but I've had experiences where that came back to haunt me. It wasn't robust enough. It wasn't, those programs weren't strong enough. And just because you might be afraid to ask your customer if they want to buy a program before they leave, don't put those programs on there. Sell them a pro version of Super Anti-Spyware.
So I absolutely believe that too. Well, 9 out of 10 of my customers usually ask me, what should I use? I need something that's going to, you know, protect from infections. They're all worried about it. They're worried about it for all sorts of reasons, usually like their data security and things like that. And I think it's absolutely something to sell people because they want that peace of mind. And it's a lot better than just some stupid antivirus.
They will exactly. They will buy it. They will love that you recommend it, something that you believe in, and they will be happy with it. And it really does happen that way. So how do you make profit on this? Well, you buy Super Nice Spyware from the website here. I'm going to give you a contact. Mike Duncan at Super Nice Spyware. Contact him. He will set up with you a discount, you know, if you buy the product in bulk, and then you could sell the product for whatever you want. So you join the reseller program, and you'll be able to get Super Anti-Spyware very cheap, and then you could sell it for a reasonable price to your customer. So they're happy, you're happy, we're all happy. Contact Mike. I say Mike because he's the man. He's a great guy, down-to-earth fellow, will definitely hook you up. It's very fair. What you want to do is call him at 541-607-6553. On a regular phone, just dial the number 541-607-6553, extension 111. If you're in your car or you can't get that, just check the Podnuts show notes at podnuts.com. We'll put that phone number in there. Or you could send him an email, mike.duncan@superantispyware.com. Tell him you heard about this on Podnuts, and he will give you a special offer that he would not have given you if you didn't mention that you heard this from Podnuts. Check it out. Or if you just go to superanispower.com, just look at the reseller program on the website there. You'll also get an idea of what's going on. But I recommend you call Mike up. And we want to thank Super Anispower for being a sponsor for Podnuts. Okay, I think that's going to pretty much wrap up the show here, Steve. I want to say thank you very, very much for bailing me out at the last second here. I don't know what happened to Doc, but I'm sure it was something that was beyond his control. So we'll have Doc on maybe another show in the future.
Sure. But thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. Anything you want to close out on? Where can people find you?
You can find me at my blog at stephendmico.com. My name is spelled with a V, D-A-M-I-C-O. So it'll be in the show notes as well, I'm sure. And my website is smdcomputer.net. And yeah, anybody that needs help with jack replacements or maybe of reheating, reflow jobs on I could do DV6000s, 2000s, and 9000s. I could do those for you. Just give me a call, or best is to give me a call, but you can also shoot me an email.
Sounds good. So give Steve a call if you need help with that, and that's going to be it for Podnuts Daily. Hey, if you guys want to send us an email, mail@podnuts.com. If you want to send us a voicemail, which we haven't gotten forever, I used to love the voicemails. They're awesome. You can hear your voice on the show. Just call 7076-PODNUT. It'll take you right to voicemail, and you can tell us whatever you want about your computer repair endeavors. And if you want to be a guest on the show, go to podnuts.com/guests. Sign up for Podnuts Daily. We're always looking for new info, new stories, and new tips. See all you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in. Music for Podnuts Daily has been provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.